Central Kentucky, January. The locals have a saying, you have to come here on purpose. This is the vastness of Kentucky, the region that stretches southeast from Louisville to the Tennessee Valley. It is a bewildering maze of knobs, gullies, streams, ridges, choked at the swampy bottoms and backwaters, breezy and cool and clear atop the region's many ridges. The meadows, breathing in the shadows of the ridges, are the gut of the country, so rich in blackberry, bramble, and cherry, with grasses that grow indefatigably in summer and only a little less lushly in the brief winters. The meadows support dairy cattle for the landholders and such an abundance of deer that even the region's skilled hunters hardly trim the population. Winters here pass mild. Snow blows across several times a year, but melts quickly. Even the songbirds seem to be resting between mid-December and February. All the greens and browns fade and blend together, and everything looks washed out and dull. The water is the same, winter or summer. The hills are rich in wells and springs, all flowing with clean, crisp, limestone-filtered water, tastier than any city tap could produce. Underground flows and seeps have worn away the region's limestone, honeycombing it with sinks and caves, famous, dangerous, and unknown. The people are clannish in the best sense of the word. Interlocking circles of families spread news, offer support, celebrate marriages, and mourn deaths at the many little churches dotting the region. They are fiercely independent, even from their fellow Kentuckians. The city folk outside Cincinnati and Louisville, the flatlanders of the more gentle hills to the west, not that they don't range their legworms there and maintain good relations with the Jackson Purchase locals, or the Appalachian mountain folk. In past decades, some were moonshiners and marijuana growers. Later, they ran internet startups and were artisans. They were the first in Kentucky to learn how to wrangle legworms, to study their herds and breeding cycles, unafraid to learn from even the smattering of grogs in southern Indiana, becoming elderly veterans of the battles following the cataclysm in 2022 in worm riding and harvesting. They used the many caves and holes to hide their weapons, their precious machine tools, their spare radios, and even explosives. This is the heartland of the old Kentucky alliance that accompanied Southern Command's Javelin into West Virginia. Now, what's left of that fellowship is reorganizing itself into the Army of Kentucky. At least, that's the formal name on the documents coming out of the government. The worm riders, wintering their mounts in the protective heaps they form around each year's eggs, are now a group called the Line Rifles, and organized into three troops: the Gunslingers, the Bulletproof, and the Mammoth. Men like to have something or someone to follow. Sometimes it's nothing but a favorite song. Other times, a bullet-torn flag. In the case of the Mounted Rifles of the Army of Kentucky, their standard is a warrior queen. Young and beautiful in her full bloom, with a mane of hair flowing and alive as a galloping horse's tail, she wears her authority the way another woman might wear a favorite hat, only taking it out for special occasions and drawing all the more eyes because of it. She's a natural atop a legworm or a horse, and she designs and sews her own uniform from egg skins she's harvested herself, bearing a pistol that belonged to her father and a pair of binoculars presented to her by the old bulletproof clan chief she grew up calling her leader. Her words were the ones the Kentucky Alliance listened to on the long retreat back from the Appalachians, when many were discouraged and wished to go home. Her voice gave the order for the counterattack on the banks of the Ohio that sent the Moondaggers running. Under her leadership, they chased the bearded invaders all the way to Bowling Green. She has her hands full at the moment. There's a white-hot blood feud with the old Coonskin clan, who betrayed the Kentucky Alliance on the long retreat, dividing cousin against cousin, uncle against niece. What's left of the Coonskins have taken on the Moondagger faith, and members of the Mammoth troop are forever disappearing for weeks at a time while they avenge some sister or cousin. As if that's not enough, the newly constituted government of Kentucky is still getting itself organized. Volunteers come in unequipped, untrained, and irregularly, hungry and in shoes with old pieces of tire serving as soles, adding to the food supply problem even while they wait for a rifle. Valentine's luck was in. As it happened, Brother Mark was also in the Karras, Kentucky Alliance heartland. They managed to get a fix on each other over the radio and agreed to meet on Gunslinger clan ground. What was left of the old alliance welcomed them into the Gunslinger camp, squatting for the winter, in the ruins of a megachurch near a group of their worm piles outside of Danville. Though they received a friendly greeting, camp was unsettling in one manner. It seemed to be devoid of men between 14 and 40. All Valentine saw were boys and old men. He knew the gunslingers had suffered losses during the summer's fighting, but he had no idea they were this grievous. There were plenty of horsemen and vehicles and guns in camp, however. Tika was there with a column of her all-Kentucky army, and Brother Mark had arrived with a few members of the assembly and their staff. Valentine presented Mrs. Okum to the temporary leader of the gunslingers, an old woman who'd long served as an advisor to their clan's leader. Mrs. Okum quivered like an excited horse as she asked the gunslinger temporary camp chief about her son.
I have good news for you, madam. Your son is alive and well. I saw him not 4 days ago.
Oh, my. May I see him, please?
I wish I could say yes. He is with our muster. They left to meet the Coonskins on the Kentucky River some ways north of here. Corporal Rockaway is serving with the new Army's artillery.
But he is a soldier of Southern Command. He has 4 years left.
An informal arrangement. He's still in what's left of the Southern Command Guard uniform. Settle, ma'am. Settle. He's just along so we can show strength if they try another decapitation attack. Fine boy you raised.
It's that last chance, raving about some kind of apocalypse that's going to hit Kentucky. Sad thing is, he's getting a few converts.
We've had a lot of townies flee to Coonskin territory. Mostly people who drew breath thanks to the Currian Order anyway, so good riddance to them.
If you could provide me with a guide.
Sorry, ma'am. I hate to say no to a worried mother. I have 4 myself and 1 grandchild. But it's a clan rule. When a fighting man is away, no parents, no children, no spouses until the fighting's over.
But there is to be no fighting.
We hope not. As I was saying, our people end up worrying more about their families than the enemy, and they get themselves in trouble that way. But it looks like you brought a few gunmen of your own. If you want to send them up with a message to your boy, they're welcome to join young Tika upcountry. Until then, I'd like to offer you our hospitality.
Gunslinger hospitality was meager with all the visitors in camp and the holidays emptying larders. Everyone was talking about the peace conference between the gunslingers and the Coonskin Moondaggers northeast of them in the bluegrass proper. The idea that Kentucky might be allowed to just let the bodies lie and stop the raids and counter-raids that had been going on ever since the Moondaggers marched across Kentucky, burning and kidnapping, gave everyone hope for an early spring without gunfire exchanged in Kentucky's tangled dells. Valentine had the disquieting feeling that their hopes would be in vain. This ceasefire might be the final calm before the storm. Tika greeted Mrs. Okum's lined-up staff and Valentine's Southern Command additions. She and a few members of her staff took a quick appreciative look at their bikes and vehicles.
How are you keeping these beasts fed in the backwoods?
Oh, we burn organic.
I don't suppose we can count on that APC up at the peace conference, can we, Stuck?
We got a few of our own wounded to take care of. It's mostly a hospital truck.
And how about lending your doc in that medical wagon, in case there's a fight?
I'll ask Mrs. Okum.
So, David, you want to join us and see the fun?
The man I'm looking for is up there already. Yes, I'm glad to accept your invitation.
On duty again, I'll bet.
I'm not sure how to categorize what we're doing at the moment. Civilian liaison, I suppose.
Figures. I wouldn't object to a quick liaison under a blanket, but this time I'm the one with the bunch of men expecting me to have my pants on at all hours. Besides, your redhead's looking at me like I'm selling new Universal Church Bibles door to door.
Valentine turned around and saw Duvalier sitting cross-legged on the hood of the chuck wagon, warming herself on the engine. She threw her leg over her sword stick and rubbed the handle in an obscene manner.
Oh, thin little thing. Your friend there? I remember her now. She's the one who comes and goes. You should buy her a good Kentucky ham.
She's always looked like that, but she still puts in 30 miles a day walking when she has to. You know, I don't think I've congratulated you on the new post.
I delivered one big victory, and now I get cheered everywhere I go. They keep saying they're gonna appoint a general-in-chief for the AOK, and I wish they'd get on with it. I'm shooting from the hip from the time I get up to the moment I pull off my boots. When I get a chance to sleep, that is. I was brought up to keep the bulletproof's worms from getting rustled and our steels from getting stolen, not to do this commanding general stuff. Speaking of which, if the men don't see me in my command truck, they won't keep closed up properly. I'll see you on the banks of the Kentucky, David.
Stuck remained at the Gunslinger winter camp. Where Mrs. Okum went, so did he, a hulking shadow. At the moment, he sat pillowed between Longshot's thighs as she rubbed oil into his scalp and massaged his temples, looking like a monkey grooming her mate.
What's that all about?
Bears get twitchy if they don't let off steam somehow. That's how brawls start. Bears with nothing to use as a way to vent. You sure you don't want to come up to the peace conference, Smoke?
There's an interesting craft market in Danville, they say. Maybe I'll visit that. I picked up some real gold braid in Indiana. I'll skip a few days of you making Google eyes at your bow-legged worm rider.
I'm not sure how to make Google eyes.
You know, Val, you're just a big plaything to her. A doll with really nice hair and a dick.
What a shame I missed Christmas morning.
That's it. I'm coming along, if only to keep you from embarrassing us.
The banks of the Kentucky were thickly wooded at the slight bulge that passed for a lake, designated as the border between Gunslinger and Coonskin territory. Behind the banks were the river-cut hills, scarred with limestone cuts and patched with tufts of wood like an old man's hairline. They could see on the other side of the river the observation posts of what was presumably the Coonskin force, no doubt here to safeguard their own negotiators. Valentine's binoculars weren't much better than his eyes at that distance, but with the help of one of the AOK's telescopes, he could get a look at individual figures. He recognized the dark battle dress and red dagger sheaths of the Moondaggers.
The Coonskins have formally united with the Moondaggers. May they live to see the error of their ways and have regret come to wisdom.
Religious nuts, huh?
If you call worshipping Kurians a religion.
Pratt turned his own eyepiece over to Bolnitz. He turned the knob back and forth, sweeping across the camp.
Some of them like the lifestyle, I guess. No tobacco, booze, or red meat. But all the wives you want. They've been calling themselves the Kentucky Loyal Host lately.
Fancy-sounding word for traitor, if you ask me.
Their long search ended in a matter-of-fact fashion. Valentine, Pratt, and Mrs. Okum's doctor were escorted to Corporal Rockaway, raised Okum, where he was setting up mortar positions on the hillside above the river.
Your boy Rockaway, or Okum, or whatever his name is, he's involved in this. He may be on one leg and wearing a diaper, but he's a heck of a fire director and trainer for our captured Moondagger artillery.
And making a bad job of it, too, to Valentine's mind. The artillery's position could be observed from across the river. Valentine remembered Rockaway as soon as he saw the face, but there had been changes. He limped worse than Valentine and seemed to have lost weight everywhere but his midsection. He was a rather plain-looking, freckled young man with sandy hair and a delicate chin like his mother's. He seemed lost in the big service jacket the AOK wore, but he still had his Southern Command helmet. Valentine was surprised someone hadn't talked him out of it when he was left behind. Javelin ran short on helmets long before they hit Evansville.
Did you pick out these emplacements, Corporal?
Orders, sir. We're supposed to show our teeth so there won't be any funny business like at Utrecht. Hey, Doc. What the heck are you doing all this way?
We've come a long way to bring you home. I'm glad to see you well. When we'd heard...
Hell, Doc. Well's a relative term. You put my first diaper on me. And I'm here to tell I'm back in diapers now and will be for the rest of my life. Some emergency patching to the digestive tract, they said. And I have to drink lots of water to help things along. But I can still fight. I just leak a little doing it. I like fighting these Moondagger sons of bitches. If everything... Well, tell Mom not to worry.
You can tell her yourself when this is done, Rockaway. She's back with the Gunslinger camp.
She came all this way too? Devoted of her. When the news came about my older brothers, she just tightened up her mouth and hung black crepe around their pictures, made big donations in their names to the rear guard fund.
Not my business to get involved in the family dynamics. Pratt, walk with me.
Heart's in the right place, but the kid doesn't know much about setting up a battery. If anything goes down, he's making it easy for the Moondaggers. They're not all cross-eyed and stigmatic, I don't suppose.
Not hardly.
Valentine thought back to the sniper's bullet that had sprayed Rand's brains all over headquarters as he spotted Tika emerging from a knot of hilltop woods, walking the ridgeline. Corporal Rockaway limped up to her. Tika pointed as she spoke, both toward the ridge on the other side of the river, where the coonskins and the moondaggers were encamped, and behind, where the rest of her train was presumably approaching and deploying. Tika was kind enough to invite Valentine to accompany her to the peace conference. All she asked was that he wear one of the AOK field jackets and a hat, and keep to the back with his mouth shut. Duvalier managed to work her way into the party, too. Bolnitz tried to get permission to come along, but Tika insisted that he stay back on the riverbank.
Remember what happened the last time we were invited to a conference, Tika?
As a matter of fact, we are very much hoping for an encore.
Without legworms? Won't you be at a disadvantage?
They'll be assuming that, yeah.
They met out on the small lake, a widening in the Kentucky River, separating Coonskin land from the gunslingers. Valentine felt like he'd read about a peace meeting like this before, but he couldn't place the exact circumstances. The two sides had rowed out to a pontoon houseboat anchored mid-lake. There, on the sun deck atop the houseboat, after both sides verified that neither had filled the living quarters with gunmen, they met. Their forces lined the tree-filled banks to either side of the river. Valentine didn't understand the fascination. There was little enough to watch. He wasn't important enough to go up on the top deck with the Kentucky or Coonskin principals, but he could listen from the base of the ladder facing the west side of the river. There were introductions, neither side being particularly gracious, beyond the grace required of opponents who were used to shooting each other on sight. If the gunslingers were colder in their formalities, it was because they'd suffered more outrage at the hands of the Moondaggers. In many more words than the Reaper's avatar used, they offered the representatives of the Kentucky Assembly essentially the same status as Jack in the Box had spoken of, a neutral Kentucky running its own domestic affairs but leaving the outside world to the Currians. The Agenda and Tika were no more inclined to welcome the proposal from some moonskin mouthpiece and a few traitors than they were through Valentine's bird-like Reaper.
Glad to see you admit we whooped you out of Kentucky.
We stayed long enough to chase Southern Command out. Then we returned to our allies.
Formerly our allies. They turned on us. They'll turn on you someday. Remember that.
You are the traitors, Tika. Koreans indulged you, and you paid them back by aiding terrorists and wreckers and murderers.
There is a reckoning coming for that. A reckoning, I say.
Last chance. You son of a bitch.
This land, long peaceful, needs to be cleansed of the filth that has washed into it. Intruders, interlopers, troublemakers. Trouble they brought, and death will be their reward. Or something worse than death.
That's not how you go about negotiating in Kentucky, Beardy. You want to deal with us, you tell us what you offer, and you let us make up our minds. You don't threaten.
Valentine recognized the voice of the new Agenda for the Kentucky Assembly. He was a man named Zettel, though most called him Mr. Z. Formerly the clan chief of the Gunslingers and a friend of Karras, Mr. Z, Valentine had been told, came from a family who'd once owned quarries, and he'd grown up covered in limestone dust.
We'll consider your offer and give you an answer tomorrow, here on the boat again. Shall we say noon?
There can be only one answer. The other doesn't bear thinking about. We both love Kentucky too much to see it turned into a graveyard.
Duvalier looked up at the sky, shivered. She edged closer to Valentine and stuck her hands in his pocket.
We could go up there and kill all of them. Pay him back for Utrecht.
Killers who don't like killing never last long. They become drunks or careless. Duvalier liked it. As long as their targets were quislings, the higher up in the social hierarchy, the better. Valentine had a dark part of him that liked it as well. The shadow that lurked inside him chose its time and place to be satisfied.
The Assembly can make up its mind. It's their choice. Let's not make it for them.
A few more words were exchanged upstairs about day and night signals. As they departed, Valentine put one hand in his pocket and gripped Duvalier's with the other, making sure she accompanied him to one of the boats heading back for the gunslinger shore. That afternoon, Valentine and Duvalier waited in line for lunch like the rest of the gunslingers and AOK troops when Tika approached.
Valentine, can I have a word?
Sure.
Her dark, good looks were suited for a chill Kentucky night. She sparkled like a bit of Kentucky's bituminous coal. Valentine knew that all you had to do was touch a match to her, and she could generate a whole evening's worth of warmth.
Mr. Z's meeting with the Assembly representatives is civilians only, so I thought I'd track you down and talk to you. What reply should we give, in your opinion?
Why should my opinion matter?
Well, I trust it, for one.
I'm uneasy. Everyone in the Kurian Order seems to be shouting surrender, or at least keep out of Kentucky. I can't make sense of it. I don't mean to denigrate the land or the people, but it's not like Kentucky's filled with industries they'd miss and resources they can't get anywhere else.
There's the coal, and the Cumberland's the easiest route to the East Coast in the South.
Perhaps they're more worried about invasion than we thought. And I can't help but feel there's something here very important to the Kurian Order.
What? We know about what they did here. They weren't all that secretive about it. There are no big tracts of the country that are off limits. A few towers in Lexington, a few more in Louisville. The legworm meat? The big plants up in Louisville fill boxcars with canned protein every day. I was told some of it even gets traded overseas.
Without food, it's hard to grow your population. Maybe that's all it is. They don't want to lose their free labor butchery.
Perhaps it's just geography. If Kentucky becomes a freehold, the free territory extends from the foothills of the Appalachians to Mexico. That's a lot of people and a lot of resources, more than many countries in the world have. The Assembly said that they wanted to hear from me before they make their final decision. Whichever way I go, I think the rest of the Alliance will follow.
It's quite a responsibility.
Well, if someone else made the decision and I didn't agree, it'd drive me straight into a froth. I think we should tell them to make like a frog and boil. I'm sure they want us to disarm, get complacent, and then they'll give us the works anyway.
Wouldn't be the first time in human history. Or the Kurians.
The locals knew how to live well, and could think of worse reasons than a Kentucky Alliance reunion to break out the barrels of beer and casks of bourbon. The sentries and flankers were out and paying attention to their duties, so it wasn't all revelry, but everyone else was taking the opportunity to unwind. Valentine didn't join in. He was tired from the trip and worried about what the Kurians were hatching in their towers, and he was in no mood for carousing, especially with negotiations at an impasse and an enemy army just across the river. Chieftain and Silvertip were content to load up with food and settle down by Valentine and Duvalier.
In another time, all we'd be worried about now is keeping New Year's resolutions. High-carb or low-carb diets.
I have plenty of resolve. I just hope I'm granted the strength to see it through. Then another generation will get to worry about their carb intake.
I don't know about that. I don't think the old world's ever coming back. Good riddance to it.
Not this speech again. I'm going back for seconds. I'll have fourths by the time he's done.
Then as they'd say in the old world, Chieftain, fuck off. You don't know wisdom when you hear it. I say it's all gotta come down. Everything. Kurian Order, the free territories. Let's say we beat the Kurians. We're not just restoring the United States as it was. There's grog settled all across, and their bands from the swamps of North Carolina through Indianapolis, St. Louis, the Great South Trail, and then up Nevada and out to Oregon. We just gonna put them on what? Reservations? Exterminate them? The Kurians have ruined half of mankind and impoverished the rest. Southern commands handed out land right and left. Suppose some relations show up with old deeds saying it's theirs. It's all gonna get burned down, and then maybe the decent folks will rebuild civilization. The honest and diligent and talented will find others of like mind and start setting up again. It'll be ugly for the Kurian herds, but maybe their kids or their grandkids will be human beings again. That's why your legion's bound to fail. Beg your pardon, Major. In the end, we'll be thanking the Kurians. They gave us a challenge, and we'll end up better for it. The way a forest fire helps the trees thrive. Gotta burn away the rubbish once in a while.
Valentine disagreed, but knew better than to get into a heated argument with a bear. Most of Valentine's command would be rubbish in Silvertip's taxonomy. Time would tell.
Valentine! Valentine! There's something brewing across the river. Can you hear it?
B, Chieftain, Silvertip, everyone up, let's go.
Pratt was already at the edge of the lake, on his belly with a pair of binoculars to his eyes.
You thinking what I'm thinking?
We're about to get served by the host.
Run to the AOK headquarters and tell Tika that they're coming.
Roger that.
Bastards. May they all rot in Kurian innards, or whatever happens when they dine.
I have a feeling it's about to become unhealthy in these trees. We better fall back to the hill.
The incoming shells lit up the vehicle park and all along the artillery line, sending up plumes of black-rimmed gasoline explosions.
Bastards are coming across.
The pontoon boat seemed to spark, and suddenly smoke began to pour out of its windows and lower doors. Strange gray smoke, to be sure, but it did its job obscuring the river. The smoke billowed and spread under the influence of the wind, advancing toward them at an angle like a flanking army. Ballantyne was of the opinion that many battles were won or lost before the first shot was fired. One side just did a better job of getting more force into a position where it could strike than the other. Such was the case here.
We need a counterattack.
Line, cheat bastards! Let me at them!
No, Chieftain, we're falling back.
Silvertip, not yet full of battle fury and able to think, grabbed Chieftain by the scruff of the neck. B did a three-limb galumph up the slope. Ballantyne's heart sunk. The Alliance vehicles all around him were damaged almost beyond belief. With a scattering of fleeing gunslingers, Ballantyne joined the route away from the riverbank, running as though hell itself followed. Another Kentucky disaster to add to his list. At least Southern Command wasn't involved with this one, and at best it would be a minor two-paragraph notation in the newspapers. They crossed into pasture.
Check it out!
Ballantyne's heart surged. A long line of foxholes and headlogs and machine gun nests stood before him. Behind that, there were piles of logs and the AOK's few armored cars. This was no slapdash last line of defense, but a prepared position. It was obviously quickly done. The fire lanes were imperfectly cleared, and the knocked-over trees didn't have their branches trimmed as they should have. But it provided ample, if imperfect, cover for the reserve.
Let's go!
The host ran blindly towards the ridge in a thick attack wave, with a skirmish line trotting hard out in front. An old trainer had once told Ballantyne that firefights are won by just putting more SOT, shit on target, than the other guy. With the lines of riflemen backed by machine gunners, who were backed by light cannon and 50 calibers on the trucks and improvised armored cars, the Kentucky Alliance was ready to throw a pound of shit for every ounce hurled back by the unsuspecting Moondaggers.
Fire!
The gunslinger's Antica's AOK had a deadly effect. Ballantyne saw limbs of trees and entire bowls fall in the holocaust sweeping across the Kentuckians' front. What it did to the enemy could only be imagined. They fell in rows, replaced by more men pouring up and over the hill.
Charge! Charge!
Chieftain, Silvertip, go!
Am I fucking charged?
The bears ran forward, spraying with their double-magazined assault rifles. Ballantyne squeezed shot after shot out, picking out officers for the most part. They weren't men. They were funny targets in dark uniforms and hairy faces. A beard on a field radio fell. A beard firing a signal flare? Down. A beard setting up a machine gun on a tripod to return fire, knocked back into the grass. Chieftain raged among a group of Moondaggers who'd found a wooded dimple in the landscape from which they returned fire. Pieces of men flew this way and that as he swung and stomped and swung again. Ballantyne spotted the Kurian machine gun as it began to pepper the gunslinger line. He lifted the Type 3.
That went well.
Brilliant retreat and counterattack, Tika.
Oldest trick in the book.
I didn't know you'd studied Scipio Africanus.
I'm not big on astrology. No, sir. I learned all my tactics reading Bernard Cornwell. It's an old Wellington maneuver. Get on the reverse slope, out of the line of fire, and then blast away when the Frenchies come over the crest and advance to throw them back. We just didn't blast them quite as much as they approached. We wanted them to scatter a bit as they advanced.
So you swapped out the artillery and vehicles last night during the party.
Too noisy for you? That was the idea. To cover sound while we were building the fortifications. We parked old wrecks and set up black-painted fence post mortars to replace the real ones.
Would have been nice to be let in on the secret. I might have been able to offer a few suggestions. We have some experienced snipers in our group. They could have trimmed the Moondaggers down by a few more.
I'm sorry, Ballantyne. But after you, Trek, I'll never trust Southern Command security again.
Valentine must have had an air of command about him, because all through the day, members of the gunslingers who'd fought with Javelin across Kentucky kept coming to him for orders, probably out of habit more than anything. Whether to bind prisoners or just march them with their hands up. What to do with captured weapons and equipment. How to organize a search party for a missing officer. Valentine issued advice rather than orders, and sent a constant stream of problems to Tika's headquarters on the ridge. For just being an observer, he had an exhausting day. That afternoon, he found Bolnitz scribbling away with the remains of a meal around him, as Chieftain and Silvertip hunched next to him with huge smiles on their faces.
You should know better than to ask bears about a fight. To hear them tell it, the rest of us are just here to keep the fried chicken and pie coming while they do all the fighting. So how's the story coming, Bolnitz?
Story? Not the one I was expecting, Major.
You're getting some good tall tales out of these two, I hope.
Kentucky's been interesting enough, but I don't know if my editor will want travelogue. I wish I had the guts to go inside one of these legworm tangles and get a few pictures, but the locals say that until the worms are born, it can be dangerous.
That's right. Make any kind of disturbance and they'll snip you in half, easy as you might pull a weed.
To be honest, Major Valentine, I was expecting you to be a little different. More of the legend and less prosaic. Where are the raids into estate homes in Indiana? You haven't even interrogated any of those moondaggers or the Kentucky host or whatever they call themselves to see what's in store for Kentucky.
The Currians never tell their foot soldiers their plans. They like to keep everyone guessing, including the other Currians. I wouldn't be surprised if the reason they're so desperate is because they're afraid Atlanta will just end up taking over Kentucky the way they have much of Tennessee. Besides, you were expecting a war in Indiana? You need men for that kind of job. Our ex-Quisling recruits need training. Most of them are experienced in handling weapons and vehicles and equipment due to a smattering of law enforcement or military duty, but they've got to learn to act as a team somewhere less predictable than a city street. More important, learn to trust one another and their officers. Trust doesn't come easy to someone brought up in the Currian Order. They're so scared of making a mistake that they'll all stand around waiting for orders and then for someone else to go first. There's a story for you. The problem is, they aren't even human in anything but shape. All the spunk's been bred right out of them. The way a team horse reacts different from a thoroughbred lead mare or a wild stallion.
Valentine spent the next 45 minutes on and off the radio. Frat had returned by then, having volunteered to scout across the river, looking thoughtful. After he secured his rifle and gear, he sat down by Valentine, eager for news.
Where's the Kentucky host? Run out for more ice?
Left the party early. Are we going down an evolutionary blind alley, sir?
Where does that come from?
They left some of their literature behind. It was a magazine I hadn't seen before, comparing various kinds of testing before and after the Currians came. Of course, the article proves there's been improvement in human mental acuity after their arrival.
An article saying it doesn't make it true. Don't read Currian intellectual porn. It's all lies anyway.
Well, I thought it was interesting. We're more moral than the enemy, right? Isn't that a hindrance? They'll do anything to win. We won't. Doesn't that make them the fittest in a Darwinian sense?
Fittest doesn't mean strongest or most brutal. Loyalty confers an evolutionary advantage. So does sacrifice. You get all this from those traditional morals the Currians dispense with. Mountain gorillas trample strangers. It's about as brutal as you can get. For all I know, mountain gorillas no longer exist.
Brat looked down. For a moment, he seemed to be summoning words, but they never made it out. They convinced Rockaway to leave his guns and return to the gunslinger camp. Now that the AOK had arrived, there were some experienced artillerymen to take over the mortar sections in any case, but he was still strangely reluctant, even though he admitted he hadn't seen his mother in years. Tika finally ended up ordering him to leave. So they rode back with Doc and his nurse and the bushmaster, surrounded by a few of the wounded and a few medical workers that were more exhausted than even the bears, having worked on the wounded on both sides in the late Battle of the Kentucky River. They were not the first to arrive back at the gunslinger camp, so the news of the victory on the riverbank and the losses had already been absorbed, celebrated, or mourned. Valentine, wanting to be a bit of a showman, had the driver back the overloaded boneyard back toward the little circle of Mrs. Okum's convoy. Valentine and Duvalier hopped out of the cab.
Mrs. Okum? Your son.
Hi, Mom.
Son?
Not quite the emotional reunion I expected.
No kidding.
What's the matter, Mother?
Sorry to see me still breathing.
You know I'm pleased to see you alive, Kev. Please be civil in front of your fellow men in uniform. Don't disgrace the uniform you wear.
Respect the people beneath the uniform, too, Mother.
If you're going to be this way, perhaps we should talk in private.
Do you have something you want me to sign, Mother, now that you've recovered from your disappointment that I'm still alive? Produce it. You know I'm not interested in running a ranch, however large.
I'm glad your father isn't alive to hear this.
Yes, yes. The good son's died, the bad one lived. God must have a plan, and all we can know is that he gives burdens to those strong enough to handle them. My mother probably left out a few details, Major. Like that the ownership of the ranch was willed by my father to his sons, and Mother only would own it if we were all dead. What is it, Mother? You want to sell off some of the land or riverfront or water rights?
I'm building a home for the disabled in the Antelope Hills on the Canadian River. I need to deed the necessary acreage to Southern Command.
I'll do you one better, Mother. I'll sell you the whole ranch, lock, stock, and the old man's cutest little whorehouse in Texas for a grand total of $1. I'll accept Southern Command scrip if you aren't carrying your usual smuggler's gold.
That's very generous of you, Kev. And I am happy to accept. The problem is that you'll have to do this in a UFR courtroom in front of a judge. My beloved husband's will was most specific on points of ownership. You probably think I'm a grasping, conniving woman, Major Valentine. Nothing of the sort. It's just extremely hard to run a business interest of this size when you can't enter into contracts without the owner's approval. And the owner is 700 miles away from a lawyer, a notary, and witnesses. My son, as you can see, is uninterested in a business that provides a quarter of all Southern Command's meat, and that employs a permanent staff of over 1,000 and seasonal help three times that.
I'm only sorry I didn't sign it over to you 2 years ago. But I was seeing Arbita, and she didn't want me to give it up. For my sins, I listened to her. But I'll sign it over to you now, Mother.
So you'll return to the UFR with us?
If that's what it takes for me to be able to live my life in peace, do my job, and marry who and where I choose, I'll take the trip.
Brother Mark needed a ride back to Fort Sing. A wounded gunslinger named Thursday was also going that way, as he wanted to recover over the winter at home with his family in a town called Grand Junction on the road back. His brother-in-law was supposed to drive out to the gunslingers and pick him up, but his brother-in-law had flaked. Again. Okum and Valentine's command had passed near it on the way up, and Thursday promised it was just over a ridge from their route home, on an old federal route in reasonably good condition. They packed up their vehicles. Valentine made sure B had all her odds and ends. Traveling with a grog was a little like taking a child or a pet on a journey. You needed to make sure you remembered favorite toys, snacks, and clothing. Thursday wasn't much of a guide. He spent a lot of time examining map, compass, and map before giving any instructions. Even still, they mostly proved to be guesswork. Valentine could have done just as well with an old road atlas. Thursday's wound was a piece of shrapnel to the buttock, or so he said, and he rode on a special pillow. Valentine wondered if he wasn't really suffering from aggravated hemorrhoids. His instincts improved once they crossed a small river and he claimed to be in home territory.
Grand Junction's not even an hour away now. Three more big ridges and we're there. We could use a garrison of you Southern Command boys now. There's a marketplace and even a bank that trades Karras's old currency for the new government scrip. Some riders came in a while back and tried to rob the town, but we shoot them off.
Most of Southern Command's back across the river. All that's left are some training and technical personnel.
That's Southern Command all over. They claim they swing the biggest dicks, but always come up short when the bell hits the floor.
Snow's coming. Guess winter's here.
In his winters south of central Missouri, Valentine had softened in his attitude towards cold weather. Winters weren't a matter of life or death survival. With desperate pre-dawn to post-dusk fall efforts to stock up on enough fuel, food, and fodder to get yourself and the livestock through to spring, an almost unimaginable span of time away. Winter was a season of rest, refit, and relaxation. The horizon closed in as the real snow started, following behind the big flakes like a wall of Napoleonic infantry advancing behind their pickets. Valentine didn't like the look of the big, soft flakes. When they first appeared, they fell idly, spinning and drifting in the wind, but minute by minute they thickened, aligning themselves in a single southeasterly direction.
Better slow down, Habanero, and turn on the running lights. I think we can quit worrying about aerial observation.
Hope we don't have to do too much off-roading in these. Wish the locals took better care of their roads.
Legworms make their own roads. We like it nice and run down. The ordnance doesn't risk their axles bothering us. Yeah, this is Kentucky. We just don't get that hard weather. Even the sky takes it easy here. This'll blow over in no time.
The storm, January, the 56th year of the Kurian Order. Though rare, heavy winter weather sometimes burdens Kentucky. Blizzards have been known to dump enough snow to form formidable chin-high drifts where the snow is pushed and channeled by wind and terrain. And once in place, the snow is surprisingly tenacious when protected by hill or tree from the sun. The storm that winter of 2076 became a byword for bad conditions for generations after. To anyone who survived it, nothing that hit Kentucky in the future could compare to those wild weeks in January when the sky seemed determined to alternately freeze and bury the state. The Moondagger prophet from the houseboat on the Kentucky River might have smiled in satisfaction as white judgment fell. Some said the real reason for the bad weather was the Kurian desire to see Kentucky's populace gathered together yet isolated, the better to be stationary targets for what bloomed like Christmas cactus in the thick of storm and gloom. The storm and the night dragged on. The snow waxed so heavy that night that they couldn't see more than 15 or 20 feet in front of Rover. The headlights reflected back so much light from the snow they did more harm than good, so they drove using the service red guide lights. The motorcycles were useless in this weather, so Stuck and Longshot stopped and hung them up on the side of the Bushmaster. Fortunately, Thursday had put them on the right road for once, and all the driver in the cramped Rover had to do was stay on it. With the storm raging outside, reaching Grand Junction became not just a matter of convenience, but of necessity. If they pulled off and camped, everything would take three times as long, thanks to the weather, and no one would have a comfortable night.
Still can't believe about the Coonskins. They were good men. Had many a meal with them when we all rode for Karras. The Moondaggers must have threatened them with something awful.
Ha! I'll bet every head in my share that no one threatened them with anything more than having to come home to six wives.
That's how the Kurians get you. Giveaways. That's how they took over in the first place, my old man always said. They showed up, and sure, they offered food and fuel, but there was more than that. They offered structure and freedom from having to think for yourself.
I'm sure that's just what people in an earthquake-hit city wanted. What the hell are you talking about, Abby?
It's like that story about how to trap swamp pigs.
Ever heard it?
No.
Well, seems that down in Congaree Swamp in South Carolina, there was a whole parcel of pigs running wild. Now, pigs are smart. Every now and then a hunter would go in and try to get one, but most came back empty-handed. The pigs were so wary and wild. Well, a strange feller came into town and said he was going to get them pigs. Of course, all of the locals about laughed him out of town, but he ignored them. Instead, he went and bought himself a couple 50-pound bags of corn. Every day he went into the swamp and poured some corn on one of the pig trails in a nice woodsy spot. Well, of course, the pigs came along and ate the corn. He was free, after all. Easier than rooting up grubs and tubers. After a few days, with the pigs showing up regular for their feed, he put a few beams down in front of the corn, and he watched them eat from a distance. Just wood on the ground, easy for a pig to hop over, and none of them minded making that jump to get at the corn. Then he started building a fence for his stockyard. He always made sure there were plenty of ways in and out for the pigs. They were a little nervous of the construction. One or two hightailed it right back into the swamp. But the rest were getting really used to that corn, so they went in. Now, gradually, he shut off the entrances and exits, kept watching them from nearer and nearer, and made it tougher and tougher for the pigs to go in and get the corn till all they had was a little gap to squeeze through. But darned if they didn't squeeze through and gobble till every last bit of the corn was eaten. Only one time, when they were done, the pigs saw that there was no way back out of the pen. He'd blocked them up. They got their free grain still. Another day or two anyway, before a big old livestock trailer pulled up, and they used sticks and dogs to herd them pigs right into the trailer. Didn't cost him much. A few big bags of corn to convince them pigs there was such a thing as a free lunch.
So that's what they're doing to us Kentuckians, you think?
I don't know if the Koreans are smart as that man down Conquery Way. But the Koreans are big on advertising their wares as free, aren't they? Sometimes I think the scariest words in the American idiom are no obligation. Of course, sometimes they stick in an absolutely free, because that one more lie just pushes people right over the edge into stupid.
They only knew they entered Grand Junction once buildings appeared on either side of the road.
I know just where you should park, Abby. There's a grain mill just the other side of town. Not one of those claptrap corrugated iron things. Real stonework. Abandoned now because of the lack of juice. We grind grain with a couple oxen these days, the old-fashioned way.
Valentine looked out the window. He was used to seeing gutted storefronts, but one of the buildings that had a hole in the front looked like it had received recent damage. The splinters in the door were white and fresh.
I wonder how long we'll be snowed in here. This town is charmingly dead.
I can't read, Ma. Repeat. Ma in chuck wagon says she just hit a person.
Good God.
Says she thought it was a big dog, but he came leaping, trying to get on the back of Bushmaster and slipped. Under her wheels before she knew it. Went right over him.
We should stop.
What kind of fool runs into a line of trucks in this weather?
Must have been a dog. Shadows are weird with all the reflections.
Here's the mill. I'll get it open for you, and then I'll check with our sheriff and let him know you've arrived. As long as it wasn't him Ma ran over.
The mill looked like a staggered tower, in levels going back from the street, rising to a sloped roof on the top floor like an old ski jump.
Always thought this building would be great to live in if you could gut and rebuild like they used to. Left, just here, Abby. Don't think you can get more than the first two vehicles parked inside. The loading dock's only made for one truck, really. There's plenty of space around the side with the train tracks.
Habanero turned on Rover's lights. A metal gate broke the pattern in the stone sides of the mill. Thursday met his dancing shadow at a crank handle.
What the hell?
Did he just fall?
It looks like he just disappeared.
Wagon Master, get ready to reverse and get out of here.
Order that, Major.
Valentine, what are you doing?
Valentine ducked down, looking into the dark of the old grain elevator. Rover's lights cast beams through that were cut off by the half-closed door. A pair of hands, Thursday's, were reaching out of the darkness and clawing in an effort to crawl back to Rover, but something was holding him back.
Major! Please!
Valentine wished he had a light clipped to the barrel of the gun. He looked around at the column, but could see nothing but the whirling flakes and the column's lights. The Type 3 pointed from his hip at the gate. He went to the crank for the door gate. Valentine extended his arm and gripped the freezing cold metal. Tendons tight, he managed to turn the wheel with one hand while he kept the barrel of his rifle pointed at the growing gap between track door and ground. Thursday's hands were twitching spasmodically now, and as more and more light bled into the mill, the rest of him was revealed. Allie was out of the car, a pistol in hand and a sword stick under her arm. Ragged, two-legged forms appeared in the white bath of the headlights. Gore-smeared mouths testified to a recent messy feast.
Rabies.
Valentine had encountered the disease on his first independent command in the Kurian Zone. Rabies was a disease of multiple strains, first used in 2022 to help break down the old order, and used here and there since whenever the Kurians needed to stir up a little chaos. On his trip into Louisiana as junior lieutenant of Zulu Company in the Wolves, the Kurians reacted by gathering up some of the indigenous swamp folk and infecting them with the latest strain. As a member of Southern Command, he'd been inoculated against the disease, but you never knew how current your booster was. Valentine had a theory that they were sometimes injected with nothing more than some colored saline solution to give them confidence before going into the Kurian Zone, so they wouldn't panic if faced with the disease, spread by bite and gouge and gush of arterial blood. It didn't take a special shot to the brain or anything like that to kill a rabies sufferer, as some people thought. Though, if you wanted to live to go home and kiss your sweetheart again, you made damn sure you put some lead into center mass, for a rabies sufferer felt no pain. Indeed, he or she felt nothing but a desire to rend and tear.
Shit!
That came from town.
Valentine took out his bayonet and fixed it at the front of the rifle. He worked the slide in the hilt, extending the blade to its full length.
Alert everyone, Habanero. There's rabies in this town and God knows where else. Get Rover and the chuck wagon inside. We can block the main door with a boneyard and stuff the Bushmaster in the truck entryway. You got a flashlight?
Here you go.
The green beam was one-tenth as powerful as Rover's, but much more flexible. Valentine played it around the inside of the grain mill. Nothing else was drawn out of the shadows by the bouncing light, so he satisfied himself that the grain elevator was empty of everything but corpses. For now. Judging from the smell, the locals used part of the old grain tower as a smokehouse. Grain mills always reminded Valentine a little of churches. They had the same shadowy, steeple-like towers, tiny staircases up to balconies and antechambers, and of course the important platform at one end. In mills, that was where grain could be ground into feed or flour. With blood and pieces of Thursday scattered on the floor, the phrase, dark satanic mills, from Blake's Jerusalem floated through Valentine's mind. Valentine pulled the corpses out of the path of the vehicles and waved the Rover in. Thursday had done them one favor before his untimely death. He had guided them to a well-built structure. Limestone gave decent insulation, and it was as strong or stronger than brick.
Mr. Valentine, if there is the rabies virus in town, shouldn't we drive on?
If the weather were clear, that would be my choice.
He's right, Miss O'Connor. We're lucky to have gotten this far.
Brat, take your wolves and scout the building.
Roger that, Major.
No noise. Put Rover over there in the corner by the old loader equipment. Get Chuck Wagon in here, too.
The medical wagon is more valuable.
Right now, the fuel in Chuck Wagon's trailer is the most important thing. We can all get a hot meal. We can refuel Rover, Chuck Wagon, and Bushmaster, and then put Chuck Wagon outside and bring Boneyard in.
Very well. You are thoughtful under stress, Mr. Valentine. I admire that. But I still think we should hurry on, weather or no weather.
You can make yourself useful by refueling Rover, Mrs. Okun.
Snow's killing the sound. Rabies are drawn to motion and sound, see? They won't see us or hear us even if the town's full of them. As long as there's no shooting.
Come in, Chuck Wagon. Come in. Move into the mill.
Easy now, B. It's okay.
Valentine was never sure how much B got from syntax and how much from tone, but she went to work arranging the bodies neatly head to toe. She put Thursday one way, and the rabies victims Valentine had shot the other. Stuck was at the gate entrance, a big gun in a sling across his chest. Valentine had to look twice, but he recognized it as an automatic shotgun. He wondered where Stuck had acquired it and where it had stayed hidden in their travels. The weapon in his arms was easily worth its weight in solid silver. It was one of the few weapons that didn't require a tripod and that could kill a Reaper with a single burst of fire. With the chuck wagon parked, its trailer well inside, Valentine waved to the driver of the Bushmaster to back the APC up through the gate and into truck dock. It would fill it, perhaps not as tight as the Dutch boy's finger in the proverbial dike, but close. Backing up the Bushmaster was no easy matter. The driver didn't have the usual rearview mirrors. Rockaway was at the top forward hatch, presumably tapping the driver's shoulders to guide him.
Get inside, Stuck. Habanero, Bushmaster needs to clear the gate and get in the loading dock. Have Boneyard pull forward and wait, buttoned up tight.
Rockaway lit up the night with his pistol, firing at the rabies running for the Bushmaster. Another charged out of the snow on his blind side. Valentine swung to aim, but the rabie jumped right out of his sights.
Major Valentine, do something!
How the hell do you shut this door?
From inside, but not yet. Get the Bushmaster in here. Ceasefire! You'll just attract more. Habanero, tell the people in Boneyard and Bushmaster to turn off lights and engines. Don't fire!
To Valentine's horror, the smaller door on the back of the Bushmaster opened. Bonitz jumped out, dragging a bloody-shirted Rockaway.
Damn it. No pencil!
The panicky fool. The fear of rabies caused just as much damage as the sufferers. A shirtless figure tore out of the darkness. It didn't so much as tackle Bolnitz as run over him. It pulled up, as though shocked he'd gone down so easily. Stuck swung with his rifle butt, cracking the Ravy across the back of the neck. It turned on him, swinging an arm that sprawled Stuck. Valentine shouldered the Type 3. It went down on its knees. Bolnitz, stunned, crawled toward the door and the safety of the mill's interior, lit by the headlights of Rover and Chuckwagon. Stuck picked Rockaway up by his belt and almost threw him through the door like a bowler trying for a strike.
What was that for?
What the hell's the matter with you? Why didn't you stay in the APC?
Duvalier, shut the damn door, but leave it open enough for someone to get in if we need them to.
Valentine dragged Bolnitz in.
You dumb shit, Bolnitz! You didn't shut the door on Bushmaster!
Everyone calm down, dammit!
A pair of hands thrust themselves under the gate. Metal bent at the bottom of the gate as though a forklift were being used to pull it up instead of a pair of hands. Duvalier rushed forward. The sword sparked as it crossed the cement along the gate bottom, leaving severed fingertips lying about like dropped peanuts.
Calming down, Stuck? We have enough people trying to kill us without throwing ourselves into the mix.
Roger that.
You wouldn't really have shot me, would you?
Maybe not me, but the bear inside sure as hell was about to.
Somebody help my son!
Roger that, Boneyard. Doc says they're nervous in Boneyard, Major Valentine. It's not exactly an armored car.
Get Doc in here at once! My son's been bitten!
I'm not opening the door until things quiet down out there. We got a first aid pack. It's the best we can do for now.
What the hell was that, Major? Have you ever seen a rabies case like that?
They were like bears. I've never seen anyone bend steel like that, except a bear.
Maybe it wasn't human. Maybe they've got a more human-looking Reaper.
A Reaper would have just torn through it. Trying to lift it is a dumb way to get in. Reapers are smarter than that.
Everyone needs to eat as much garlic as possible. I'll make a poultice for Kev.
Oh, that's an old wives' tale, Ma.
Well, I got to be an old wife by following old wives' tales. So you'll eat your garlic.
Valentine had heard dozens of folk remedies supposed to ward off rabies. Eating asparagus was one of the stranger ones. Getting iodine into a rabies bite right away was the only one the Miskatonic people said worked. Iodine and a quick broad-spectrum antibiotic within a few minutes. The latter was a good deal less easy to come by in the Kurian zone. Instead of reminiscing, Valentine should be refueling Rover and getting the Boneyard in, and then they could take care of Bushmaster. Everyone should get a hot meal and catch some rest, too. And he'd better see how the wolves were doing, battening down the office in front. So much for the responsibility-free tour of Kentucky.